Hey, college football fans, Joel Klatt here. And over on my podcast, The Joel Klatt Show, we discuss the best teams, players, and storylines in all of college football. Any questions? Then send them in to the Joel Klatt Show mailbag, and I'll answer them. Tap the banner to follow The Joel Klatt Show on Spotify.
Hello and welcome to Speak for Yourself. I'm Jason McIntyre. He's Greg Jennings, in for Whitlock and Wiley. Joined today by a couple of NBA champions. Steven Jackson, my man, and Matt Barnes. Guys, let's get started with LeBron James, whose season is now over with the Lakers deciding to shut him down for the last few games of the year. That's not even the worst news for LeBron this week. A report just surfaced that his teammates had a meeting back in February to discuss his bad body language, something LeBron admitted he has struggled with for his entire career. Greg, the question is, should the Lakers be worried about LeBron's relationship with his teammates?
I think the Lakers should be worried. And it really has nothing to do with LeBron James. It has everything to do with the guys around him. With him having such a young core around him, the immaturity level of what it takes to win and what is expected of you when you're playing with arguably the best player to ever put on a uniform and step on the hardwood. He's going to have body language. He's going to say things that is going to challenge you every single day. And I think when I look at the Los Angeles Lakers and what LeBron James was able to do and not able to do, a lot of it had to do with the inability for these young guys to really step up to the plate and be what his expectations of them were for them to be. And that's why I think there's a rift. Obviously, him being a part of wanting them to be traded and adding AD during the middle of the season, that's hard to overcome when you're a young guy as well.
My first thought was, geez, I've seen social media, Instagram, Twitter, the night after games, right? And everybody goes on social media to see the highlights. And Greg, I cannot say enough how many times people love to highlight LeBron. Oh, look, LeBron's disappointed in that guy's shot. Look at LeBron on the bench. He's not interested. He's sitting away from the team. And I wonder how much that stuff gets in Kyle Kuzma's head, or Brandon Ingram's head, or Lonzo. And, you know, when you translate it to this story, guys, this is just a situation where I know they're going to try to get Anthony Davis this summer. And what happens if they fail? I mean, Steven, we were talking about it beforehand. Like, listen, he's the big fish they want. If they try to trade all these guys again, and they're unable to, LeBron could theoretically get stuck with Lonzo and Kuzma and Ingram for another season.
Well, first, let me send love to Nipsey Hussle and his family. We lost a pioneer, a legend. Yesterday, and I want to say love to Lauren London and Nipsey Hussle's family. With the Lakers, I think, for the most part, I know they didn't call him out like me and you would. It wasn't the LeBron, you wasn't doing this. It was more of like, well, you know, LeBron, you don't do this all the time, and I really don't feel comfortable saying you're not playing defense, but you haven't been. No, it wasn't how we would have done it, because it's not players on that team that he respects. He respects them as players, but they haven't done enough to go at LeBron, and Rondo has, but they don't have enough veterans in the locker room that can hold them accountable, and he respects it. If they did have a talk, it wasn't the way it was supposed to go. Now, as players, we all see LeBron have lapse in defense, lapse in being a great teammate at times, but that's all been nitpicked now because they're losing. He's a great teammate, yep. Why we not talk about James Harden, his defense? He can get crossed over in the phone booth. So if you want to nitpick at everybody, but don't just nitpick at LeBron because they're losing. Just have that same energy next year because it's going to be a different team.
Right. No, I agree. I think this is something he even spoke that he's been working on over, you know, an amount of time, his body language. So, like I said, this is nothing new. I think everything is under a magnifying glass here. And this is the one time I think that a lot of people are really – I've never seen someone be kicked so much while they're down, especially a superstar. You know what I mean? I think the world has almost waited for this time to, okay, we finally see a real chink in his armor. He couldn't bring the Lakers back to promise, so let's try to bury him while he's down. And like Jack said, I mean, enjoy it while you can. You know he's going to get back in the lab this summer and work really hard and probably lose a little bit of weight because he's getting a little bit older to take some wear off his body. But you made a great point. In all actuality, he could get stuck with, and I don't want to say stuck, yeah, like these are bad players. These are very talented players, just under different kind of circumstances. You know what I mean? You got the world watching you every day. You got Magic trying to trade you. You got LeBron trying to trade you. So I think that in itself is going to stunt their growth and their ability to trust and communicate and play well. But the Lakers have to be careful as a whole because they could be have the same team back next year and try to say like, okay, well, we tried to trade you at the deadline. That didn't work. We tried to trade you during the summer. That didn't work. But we believe in you this season, so come play hard for us.
If I'm the Lakers, I'm more worried about the medical staff on the Lakers because half the team was injured this year again. Ingram's missing 20-plus games. Lonzo, again, missing 30. Josh Hart, now two seasons in a row, missing over 20 games. Now, and LeBron.
If they weren't losing, a lot of those guys wouldn't have missed them games. They would have played some of them games.
That's the point that when you made that, that's what I take away from this. Anytime, and you guys know, anytime you're losing, everything is magnified.
Especially with the Lakers.
Especially when you're in a playoff, historic team, franchise, mm-hmm. like the Los Angeles Lakers, and the expectations are through the roof. LeBron knew what he was getting himself into. He didn't come to L.A. with the, we're going to win one, we're going to win two. He didn't come with all of that.
He knew
that it was going to be work and a work in progress.
Right.
This is what he's had. This is what the cards that he's been dealt. This is how the process is, and it's unfolded. Unfortunately, they didn't get where they wanted to be, which is in the playoffs, to at least achieve or attempt to try to win the championship.
And you know that Lonzo and the young guys are going to watch the coaching situation closely. Is it going to be a LeBron handpicked coach, or is Magic Johnson going to get his guy? There was a report last week, Stephen, about maybe Jason Kidd in the mix. We know Ty Lue's going to be in the mix. If I'm the young guys and I see LeBron get his guy in there, I'm definitely nervous about the
future. Well, regardless who his guy is, I think whoever, if it's a J. Kidd, if it's a Ty Lue, those players are going to respect him more than they respect Lue. I can guarantee that. Yeah. I can guarantee it. And that's going to be big for this team going forward, whether if it's the young guys still there, whether if it's new guys coming in. It has to be a coach that can demand respect and make players buy in, and Lue is not that guy.
Well, as we just mentioned, LeBron James' season is over, and we should probably all be grateful. Not only did the Lakers miss the playoffs, they also just went 28-27 when LeBron was on the floor. But his biggest impact might have actually been off the court, with their locker room consumed by drama for most of the season. So, Jason, I ask you, will this season be a ding on LeBron's legacy?
I think in the short term, Greg, yes, but that will only last this summer until they go free agent big game hunting. But big picture, no, I don't think it will be. I mean, this is the first failure of sorts for LeBron since he missed the playoffs forever ago, or you could even pin it back to that Mavs final series when he was in Miami. How did he respond when he lost that series, guys? He won two straight titles, goes back to Cleveland, wins another one taking down the Warriors, and nobody is thinking about that Mavs playoff series anymore, right? So as soon as they win next year, the year after, I think people will forget about this. Remember, Kobe did not make the playoffs at 26 after Shaq had left. 3 years later, they get Pau Gasol. Boom, they win titles. Nobody talks about Kobe missing the playoffs.
Yeah, I'm with you there. I don't think this is the ding whatsoever. Not even in the short term because, again, he knew what he was getting himself into. The Lakers knew what they were getting themselves into. And let's not forget, he went to 8 straight finals before this year. So we want to focus on this year and what he was unable to accomplish. Mm-hmm. 8 straight finals for any player in any league is unprecedented. They were in the 4th seed when he was playing, when he was healthy, when they had everybody. So had he been able to ride out healthy this entire season, mm-hmm. who knows what we're saying right now at this present point. We're not even talking about, is this a ding on his legacy?
No, this definitely isn't a ding by any means. And I think you guys made a great point. I know LeBron knew what he was getting into. I think management got really excited. Fans got really excited and overhyped the situation. You know, as a former player, you know it takes time to gel. It takes time to get chemistry. It takes time to get to know players, the trust, everything you need on the court to succeed. Trust in the locker room. Chemistry in the locker room is also important. You know, and you heard they're having these players-only meetings. So I think LeBron knew what he was getting into, but, you know, Magic and everyone else was excited, and they were trying to sell the world a dream, and it kind of backfired a little bit. But LeBron has been the reason why, you know, in people's eyes. And I see polls, should they trade LeBron? Like, it's absolutely ridiculous, the kind of stuff people say. But, you know, they were sold a dream, and the dream didn't happen. That's not all LeBron's fault. I mean, several people can take blame in that, but even if they were healthy, even if they stayed in the 4th seed, you know, they probably could have made a pretty decent run. Who knows if they would have made it out the first round or not. But it was going to take some time to build this team. This wasn't just because we got LeBron, we're contending for a title now. And I think that's what a lot of fans and management was trying to sell to the world.
You know, the basketball guards speak, and when they speak loud. You got to hear them when they're talking. They basically telling LeBron, okay, you're great. You dominate in the East, but we want to show you what this Western Conference is like.
Right.
It's a whole different monster.
Right.
And all the people, I got to continue to say, all the people that's killing him now, they've been waiting for a chance to kill him,
Caleb.
Keep that same energy.
Right.
Because it's going to be different. Mm-hmm. And one person, just like only player to come back from 3-1, every time somebody killed LeBron, he always rises to the occasion. And I expect him to do that again next year.
Yeah, Matt made a great point about the Lakers in December. We forget LeBron was a top three MVP guy. Right, I think he finished 27-8-8. They were fourth in the West, okay? Yeah. I was extremely bullish on the Lakers. I thought they could make the Western Conference Finals. I take it I was wrong. I don't think anybody out there had the Lakers finishing 10th in the West and missing the playoffs, Greg.
Yeah, we didn't have them missing the playoffs and finishing 10th in the West because nobody ever accounts for injury.
Right.
Nobody says, okay, this year, if LeBron misses 18-plus games, where would the Lakers be? Nobody even ever talks like that. And so you go into a season and you're thinking everything is going to be clean. Everybody's going to stay healthy. What we have on paper is what we will have on paper to end the season. It's never the case. You have some adverse situations. Every team goes through it. How you handle those situations is what makes your team great and how you can build and have it kind of formulates the building blocks to continue going forward in the future.
And why are we nailing down a guy's legacy at 33 anyway? Now he's 34 years old and we want to pin his legacy down. LeBron's probably got three more really good years left at this age. I mean, he could still play deep into his 30s and excel.
It's just a conversation piece.
That's what I'm saying. There's nothing else to talk about. You know, I think people have to understand a lot of luck goes into the playoffs, championships, good season. A lot of luck. Like, key people, members have to stay healthy. You know, you saw what happened to Houston with Chris Paul. They could have probably beat the Warriors in Game 7, but Chris gets hurt. That's bad luck. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? So a lot of luck goes in that people don't realize. But at the same time, this team with LeBron being hurt, Rondo missed significant time, Zoe missed significant time, key members were missing different times, so they never really had their key core be able to build that chemistry throughout the season. That's what you definitely need with a new team, a young team. This is the first time LeBron's never had any of his guys in the organization, so to speak, from management to coaches to players to Cowboys, whoever. This is a completely new situation. So it was going to take some time, but with guys missing, like you said, injuries throughout the season, they never got a chance to build that chemistry on and off the court. And
so let me ask, Matt, do you think the Lakers will maybe concede a little bit? LeBron, do you want to bring some of your guys into the organization this summer to become the old LeBron?
I think all of his guys are getting a little old. You know, the J.R. Smiths, the J.R. Smiths and guys that his road dogs that he rode with and got to the finals, those guys are getting a little older now, so it's going to be tough. But like I said, I think the core they have is very talented. You know what I mean? They just don't have time to allow them to develop. And people think that stuff happens overnight. Stars aren't born overnight. You get a strike, lightning in the pan every once in a while, and you'll get a LeBron ready to go off the bat. But some guys take time to develop, and they have some future stars on that team. They're just not getting a chance to develop.
Welcome back. Jason McIntyre and Greg Jennings in for Whitlock and Wiley. We're joined now by Fox Sports radio host Doug Gottlieb and Fox College basketball insider Evan Daniels. Let's get to the tournament, shall we? Zion Williamson and Duke, oh no, they were eliminated last night, losing a thriller to Michigan State. With his one-and-done year finally complete, Zion Williamson will now turn his attention to the NBA, or rather, the NBA will turn their attention to Zion, who's expected to go number one in the draft and is generating more hype than any player in years. But not everybody is buying it, with the always controversial Gilbert Arenas saying of Zion, quote, "You have this great phenom player that has no true skill. Do you know how to come off of pin downs? Do you know how to run baseline curls? Do you pick and roll, pick and pop? No, you're just, ouch, Blake Griffin-ing it. You're going to be the number one pick, and I'm struggling with how you can't do a majority of the stuff that other players can." Greg, oh boy, do you have any concern Zion Williamson will not live up to the hype?
Absolutely not. and again, I respect Gilbert Arenas, and I think I understand what he's trying to say, that he's not proven that he can do one or two specific things outside of the interior rebounding and just playing physical basketball. But have we not seen Zion Williams bring the ball up the court? Have we not seen his passing ability? Have we just overlooked all these things? Is he a great shooter? No. Is most college athletes a great shooter coming out of college straight to the pros? Not all of them. There's very few that are. But what I do like about Zion Williamson, why I disagree is because he has everything that most players don't have. Number one being the competitive heart. He has the ability to just give you what is needed in the biggest moments when it matters most. Mm-hmm. That's what a lot of players lack when it comes to how great they can actually be. So I love Zion Williamson. I absolutely believe that he has room for improvement. But what I see on the basketball court is a guy who has a lot of ability that can do basically whatever's asked of him. In his role at Duke, he was asked to be an interior guy and be that glass-hounding, physical-featured guy inside. That's what he provided for that team.
No concern whatsoever, Greg. Gilbert Arenas is being silly here. Folks, this is a situation where Zion is a unicorn. People are trying to put him in. Maybe he's Blake Griffin. Maybe he's Larry Johnson. He's none of those guys. He's a unicorn. We've never seen a 6'7", 280, 85-pound guy with this freakish athletic ability. And remember, coming out of high school, he beat up a bunch of, like, South Carolina small school kids. And people were doubting him. I myself doubted him a little bit. I was like, I don't know if he'll be the number one pick. He was unbelievable. I think he's going to go into the league and be the most impactful, transcendent player possibly since LeBron James.
Well, I think some of it comes down to what are your expectations for Zion Williamson? Like, if you're going to compare him to LeBron James, one, I think that's unfair. You know, LeBron and Michael Jordan, those are in a category where players shouldn't be compared to them. Zion is the most unique prospect that I've ever seen on a basketball court. He's built like a Mack truck. He's 6'7", 285 pounds, and he's versatile, and he has ridiculous speed, ridiculous athleticism, a 46-inch vertical. He's just different. He's most unique, more unique than any player we've ever seen on the court. So it comes down to your expectations. Can he live up to them? Well, if they're that he's going to be LeBron, that's unfair. Can he be an all-star? Certainly. This is a kid with so much transferable skills. And you mentioned there being question marks. Well, there's question marks about every player that enters the NBA draft. There's been question marks about Anthony Davis entering the draft or Joel Embiid. I think he's the best prospect to enter the draft since those two guys. But there's always going to be questions about draft picks.
I think you nailed it, actually. It's what are your expectations of him? You talked about him playing inside. He's a power forward. He's going to be a small ball center. Who can bring the basketball off the court, but he's not LeBron. And Gilbert Arenas is talking about coming off pin downs. He doesn't know how to. It's one of the flaws with one and dones is guys don't know how to run offense. They don't know how to run screens, but it's also not something that he's ever going to do. He'll be the one setting the pin down screen because he's just an undersized big. The league has changed and evolved, and he actually fits it perfectly.
Perfectly.
He's what Draymond Green has done for the league. This is kind of the next wave. This is Draymond Green's overall length and skill of being able to guard positions 1 through 5. And then Draymond's become really a poor offensive player as a shooter. The other thing is he can actually score in low post. Mm-hmm. And there are very few guys that can legit score because guys are so big and so strong and it's so physical down there. But for a man his size, he's got unbelievable lateral quickness. We all make a big deal about 46-inch vertical, and that's great. But it's his ability to recover. Mm-hmm. How about there was a move in the Sweet 16
where
he got his ankles broken, recovered and blocked a shot. Like, dude, I've never seen that before. So you're right. We haven't seen it. You're right. It's a unicorn. Gilbert Arenas is not technically wrong, but in that the Blake Griffin, but he has more skill than Griffin did as a low post player. Maybe at any point in the first 5 years of Blake Griffin, and he's a much better ball handler than Blake was coming to the league.
Yeah, and some of it, you said expectations. Steph Curry came into the league, you know, wasn't the top pick, obviously. Small kid, exceeded expectations. Even Luka Doncic last year, nobody thought, like, we liked him coming in, but nobody thought, oh, this guy's going to be blow the league away. Zion right now has to be, what, like an 18-7 guy as a rookie and have some highlight reel moments where people are going to be, I don't know. But a lot of it is fit, right? If he goes to, say, Atlanta with a Trey Young, that's going to be a fun team.
No question. And I think some of it comes down to, too, you can't just put Zion in a box. And you can't – there's not a comparison for him because he's different than what we've ever seen. And I think in the NBA game where there's more space, you know, he's already so good in transition. If he can get to the rim, he's going to punch it on you. But he's so strong and tough and physical. But in space and transition, he's going to be a monster.
Look, the big question that we're kind of is the weight. And what can he play at? How much can he keep off? Is he still the same guy? Can he play at 260? Because – like, look, the shoe, and that's one bad shoe from Nike, which probably, by the way, made him a ton of money. Just because everybody became aware, non-basketball fans became aware of this kid because his shoe blew off. And like, oh, and he's going to be the number one pick. But that's the type of torque he's putting on his ankles, his knees, his hips, his back every time he plants and cuts. And no one's done it before, right? Like we, Rodney Rogers, his body kind of broke down. And Robert Traylor, rest in peace to Tractor. He was that size, but he couldn't, you can't play at that size, I don't think. And it's not the jumping, it's the landing, right? It's the planting. Can you do that? That's more of a legit question that people have. And then there's the honest question of, you know, like between Ja Morant and his teammates, like, are you better off getting a guy who dominates and handles the ball more because that's the way the league is going? I don't think so, because I think that that position, the 4-5 undersized hybrid that can also guard a point guard, I think those are – Draymond Green's a big reason they've won two championships. And they come around far more seldom, right? Am I saying far more seldom or less seldom? I always get confused. Than the dominant ball handling guards are.
Last quick point. Remember, he's 18 years old. This Gilbert Arenas nitpicking about pin downs and all that stuff. Like, he's going to get to the league and they'll coach him up. I think a little overblown on that part. Would you agree with that?
Yes, but look, one of the things that the none and duns especially, and we're trending into that direction. If you look at them, a good portion of them are they're missing those finer points of their game. Dwight Howard never became a refined low post scorer. I think you need college. I really do. Not just personally to kind of evolve as a person, but I also think that you have coaches that they built their entire career improving players in a college game for 18 to 22-year-old players, and there's gaps in them. And guys come out, and now even with the one-and-dones, they don't know how to read defenses, they don't know how to read screens, and they don't know how to play when they don't have the basketball in his hands. I think that's Gilbert venting a little bit. I don't know if it applies as much to Zion as it does to other players.
Yeah. To another guy who might not be living up to the hype, John Calipari, whose Kentucky team just came up short again, getting knocked off in the Elite Eight by 5-seed Auburn. Calipari has now been in Lexington for a decade and gets arguably the best talent every single year. But he's only won one title and hasn't made the Final Four since 2015. Jason, do you think Coach Cal has actually underachieved at Kentucky?
Yeah, Greg, there's some news on Calipari just breaking now that Kentucky has offered him a lifetime contract. They don't want him going to UCLA or any other job. I think you can make the case that Calipari is a bit, you know, he's underachieved a little bit, okay? When you look at the 9 years he's been in Lexington so far, 19 lottery picks he's had, okay? That's more than Coach K in the exact same time frame. Usually, he's losing as a favorite, Greg, in March, okay? He was favored over Auburn yesterday. They lost their leading scorer against UNC for the game, and he could not pull off that victory. Last year, lost as a favorite in the Sweet 16 to Kansas State. A few years ago, lost as a favorite to Indiana in the second round. Like, he's underachieving in March, I would argue. But again, I will say this. I'm not bashing Calipari, Doug. I'm not killing him. It is tough to get to the Final Four. Fun fact, Coach K, 2 Final Four appearances in the last 15 years. It isn't easy to get to the Final Four, but Calipari's had more talent, and I would say, yes, he's underachieved.
I agree with you. I think he has underachieved simply because he has had the talent every single year, and he tends to get that talent every single year. And he's embraced it. That's the thing that probably stands out to me the most. He's embraced the one-and-done deals with these young kids, and he's telling them, come here, you'll play as a freshman, you'll have an opportunity to jump to the NBA. I don't mind it. Just come play for me. And with embracing something like that, you have opportunities to miss, or you miss opportunities to make sure that you are one of the better coaches, or you can have those longer or deeper runs in the month of March when it really counts. And it just hasn't happened for John Calipari and his Kentucky Wildcats.
I think the big thing is you know how hard it is to get to a Final Four and win a national championship? He's been in Kentucky for 10 seasons. 7 of those seasons, he's gone to an Elite Eight. 5 of those seasons, he's won an SEC title. 4 times he's been to a Final Four. He's won a national championship. Yes, he has a ton of talent, but it is hard to win a national championship. Look at the Elite Eight games. All those games came down to one final play. And when it comes to these coaches, they're trying to get these kids prepared for those moments. Are they mentally tough enough to execute in those moments? I actually thought Calipari did a great job with this Kentucky team. If you look at their first game of the season, they got smashed. Yeah. by Duke.
Eviscerated.
Eviscerated. And they continuously got better. They ran into an Auburn team that is hitting on all cylinders. And obviously, they didn't have Chuma Okeke. Are there times where the bracket looked like it opened up for Kentucky and they didn't take advantage of it? Yes. Last year, Kansas State. This year, Auburn without Chuma Okeke. But it is hard to get to a Final Four, and it comes down to one or two plays. We saw it. Kenny Goins doesn't make that three against Duke. Duke's in the Final Four. If everything doesn't go right for 5 seconds for Virginia, then Purdue is in the Final Four. It comes down to one or two plays. It's so difficult.
Well, here's the problem. We use the term talent, and that's because we look at yesterday through the prism of today, right? Like when Eric Bledsoe and John Wall and Boogie Cousins lost to West Virginia, dude, how do you lose that game? Like, yeah, but that's because they were 18 at the time. They couldn't shoot. John Wall still can't shoot, right? They were 4 of 32 from three-point range against a 1-3-1 zone, right? That's college basketball. I mean, it's different than – basically, I think he's Nick Saban. And the only difference, you'd say, well, Nick Saban's won more championships. Like, yeah, he doesn't have to win 6 games to win a championship. He doesn't have to. And he has far better players that have to stay for 3 years as opposed to John Calipari, where you also have to understand the culture of basketball and how it's taught, coached at the youth and AAU level before he ever gets them. It's not, they're not taught defense. They're not taught rotations. They're not taught offensive sets and understanding time, score, shot clock, and what we want to do here. He has to rewire kids the entire first half of the season before he ever figures out, all right, what do we have and how do we win games? And then you leave yourself up to where ball's in the air. You know, you have an 18-year-old kid. Like, look, his freshman doesn't make shots. Freshmen don't make shots. They don't. When they come back for their sophomore year, they make more shots. Don't believe me? Look at P.J. Washington 1 year to the next. So I'm not going to sit here and tell you that he's James R. Naismith, who, by the way, invented the game and is the only Kansas coach ever with a losing record. He invented the game. He's got a losing record. It's a hard sport. But I actually think that if you want to tell me that John Calipari is underachieved, we can have that argument, but losing to a Bruce Pearl coach team, and Bruce Pearl should eventually be in the Hall of Fame, that just won the SEC tournament championship, the third time you've played them in overtime, in the Elite Eight, is underachieving, then I can't help you out.
Well, you're making an argument. The Nick Saban stuff, we got to stop there.
No, Nick Saban's the greatest recruiter in the history of college football. This guy's the greatest recruiter in college basketball.
SEC, they dominate the league. SEC football is dominant. This year, SEC basketball was good. Usually, it's a walkover for Cal. But you just talked about, like,
Florida won 2 national championships before they got there. Have you noticed they haven't won any since
they've been
there?
We saw Michigan State and Auburn with veteran guards totally dominate down the stretch. And Izzo, you made a great point on Goins' shot. Tom Izzo called timeout twice down the stretch, set up perfect plays, and the veterans delivered. I didn't see Calipari do that down the stretch against Auburn. I mean, they had a 10-point lead in the first half, and he blew it.
It's a great point you make if you just take the prism of watching it on TV. One, Tom Izzo always calls timeout in the situation. Secondly, the jump shot was not the play. That was just a screen where Zion Williamson and Trey Jones got confused.
Simple action.
Simple action and a down screen. Like, even Izzo would tell you, like, that there wasn't anything special.
It was perfect. I mean, he'd sank the three.
And part of the Calipari thing is he trains them the whole year to just go play. And because he knows he has good players, instinctual players, let's let him go play. Let's get the ball to P.J. Washington, who's the best player in the SEC, and figure it out from there. So I hear you on the timeouts, but oftentimes if a guy draws up a timeout, it allows the defense to set. It allows them to know what's coming. Whereas if you have better players, don't call timeout and just let them play. That's his philosophy, and it has worked enough.
Yeah, I think it's definitely worked a lot. I lived in Lexington for 10 years. I know what the expectations in that city are for the University of Kentucky. It's to get to Final Fours and win national championships. He's won one. He's been to 4 Final Fours. I think that's a pretty darn good job. Is he getting elite talent year after year after year? Yes, he is. He's done a good job with that elite talent. But a lot of times it just comes down to that one play, and it's difficult.
Welcome back. Jason McIntyre and Greg Jennings in for Whitlock and Wiley. Doug Gottlieb is back with us. And we're joined now by former Pro Bowler T.J. Houshmandzadeh. Let's move to the NFL, where the drama surrounding the Steelers has dominated offseason headlines, from Antonio Brown getting shipped out of town to Big Ben's former teammates putting him on blast in the media. Of course, Big Ben has used his own weekly radio show to put teammates on blast for years. But now, reportedly, the quarterback is unlikely to continue the show this season after all the negative press. Greg, do you think your guy, Big Ben, has taken too much heat for the Steelers' mess.
No, I do not. Woo! And let me say this. I think it's a great decision that he's making to not do the radio show, not continue the radio show. And the reason why I say that is because Ben has often always gotten to put himself in the position where he talks too much. He says too much. At his position, yeah, at quarterback, knowing what goes, the ins and the outs of the locker room and the game, he tends to say too much, and then we have a way of spinning it the way we want to spin it. Obviously, with what has transpired with Antonio Brown, Le'Veon Bell, all these guys, anytime you exit, you're going to have things to say. You're going to say a lot that you wouldn't say if you were still in-house. What I do know is that everything that they're saying, it's not always false. There is truth to that. Now, I'm not saying Ben is the only problem, and these guys have not been any of the problem because they share blame. Ben does not deserve all the blame, mm-hmm, but he definitely deserves a lot of the blame that he's getting.
So interesting with the Steelers team. I mean, you know, last year it was, oh, Mike Tomlin's the problem. Can't control the locker room. Now it's Big Ben, okay? No blame for Le'Veon Bell or Antonio Brown. It's just, it's interesting how that tends to happen. And Greg, listen, I was never a star athlete going on a weekly radio show. Did Aaron Rodgers go on a weekly radio show? Wait, I know Tom Brady canceled his.
What did Le'Veon Bell do?
Le'Veon do?
Nothing.
I don't know.
What did he do?
Yeah, here we go. Defending Le'Veon Bell.
What did he do?
This is a guy who shows up right before the Jacksonville Jaguars playoff game at the tail end of walkthrough, just casually strolls in. Hey, what's up, guys? Then he decides, I'm going to just sit out the season. He played by his own rules, and that did not go well.
If they would have given him a contract, Tomlin, he wouldn't sit out.
Oh, right. Yeah, no contract. Give him a contract. He didn't want the contract.
Wait, why should he want something that he feels is unfair?
Have you ever heard, you guys were in the league a long time, you ever heard offensive linemen turn on one of their own? Have you guys ever heard that?
Not publicly, yes. like it happened, yes, with the Steelers.
Okay, yes.
Well, I've heard of it, but not publicly.
Exactly.
Publicly, have you ever heard that?
No.
Right? Because everybody's like, look, I always support you and get more money because you get more money, we all get more money, right? So I don't know what Le'Veon did, but whatever he did, he pissed the guys off that blocked for him. So I'm not going to sit here and defend him because obviously the guys that should be defending him were not. Now, in regards to Big Ben Roethlisberger, like, if he doesn't have a governor that can control what he says, I guess this is the best option. I also think part of this is, like, a newer wave of players that are a little bit too in their feelings when they hear something that doesn't sit well with them, right? Like, and this is to your point, Greg, a lot of times if you listen to him, listen to the entire context of it, he calls himself out. Hey, I got to be better. He's done that several times over. We all got to be better. And when he points out that somebody ran the wrong route, like, look, it's just, I'm just telling you what happened on this particular play, but it doesn't, how it's received in a wide receiver or running back's ears in 2019 might be different than how it was in 2007, just because players now are a little bit more sensitive over how they're being portrayed in the media.
But he has to know that when you blame somebody else, how it's going to be received. That's not going to make headlines, oh, I have to be better. We know that. When you don't win and you don't play well, of course you have to be better. But when you call, you don't have to call anybody out. That was the beginning. Is, does he deserve to take heat? Of course he does, because if he doesn't come out and say what he said after the Denver game, this Antonio Brown situation never transpires and goes this route, ever. You know, we lost a game. We could have done a few things better, Antonio Brown and myself included. That's it. There's not a big deal. But when you attack it the way he did and makes Antonio Brown feel like you're singling me out, like I'm the lone reason we lost that game, now it's a problem. And so everything that you've done before that and the, yes, things you do after that will be magnified, well, now in my eyes.
So Doug mentioned, you know, where were the defendants for Le'Veon Bell? How come nobody was defending Antonio Brown when he threw a football at Ben's feet and said, I'm out of here, and walks out of practice? Like, I just don't think you can do that and totally be off the hook.
How many players have we heard come out and say negative things about Antonio Brown throughout this whole entire ordeal?
I don't think any other.
Zero.
Zero. So that lets me know right then and there what Antonio Brown has chosen to do.
A lot of people that silent,
like, that's
means they agree with.
And then when we talk about the Le'Veon Bell issue, the reason why his offensive lineman decided to say something is because now when it really comes down to it, and I want you to play because I'm going to benefit from you, I need you there. So now I'm going to say something, and now you're not returning my phone calls. Now you've completely shut not only the organization off, but now you're shutting us off as players, and I thought we were better than that. Now I'm in my feelings. Now I feel like I need to project and say something else.
Look, I think we're talking about two different topics. I do think the Le'Veon thing comes down to he probably wasn't honest with those guys, right? Is that he told them, don't worry, I'll be back first day of the season. Because at the Super Bowl the year before, he was like, I ain't coming to any of that stuff. But, I'll be there first. And then he changes his mind, even though he had a long-term offer or he could have taken the $14 million. And I think you can lie to anybody else in the world. You can't lie to your boys, right?
Yes.
Because they have your back. I think this with Ben is a reaction to the silence you've heard in terms of a lack of support of Antonio Brown. He's like, look, I hear you, okay? And whether it's the GM saying that I'm the adult and you're the kid, that didn't go over well. Like, let's just bury all the nonsense, stop the social media, I'll stop the local media, and let's get it back together. The Pittsburgh Steelers are trying to win with a culture change. We'll see, because they lost two super, super talented players. Culture only gets you so far. You do need dudes to get open and to make plays.
Absolutely. To another aging QB, Eli Manning, who has gotten several votes of confidence from the Giants this offseason, with Coach Pat Shurmur and General Manager Dave Gettleman both saying the team is behind Eli. Well, now the Giants might put their money where their mouth is, with the team reportedly ready to extend Manning's contract into the 2020 season if a successor doesn't emerge this year. Jason, are you buying that the Giants could start Eli for the next 2 years?
Yes, but not at $22 million or whatever it is, Greg. Listen, this thing is, if you look at Eli's numbers this year, he was not awful. His completion percentage was great. I know what you're going to say. Well, he just, TJ's not, already fired up.
Wait. He was not awful.
That's terrible.
Exactly.
When you start your argument with he's not awful.
I'm going to back it up. Do you know who he compared to according to all the advanced numbers? He was right there with Cam Newton, Dak Prescott, Marcus Mariota, like Matt Stafford. That's who he compared to with the advanced numbers. He took a lot of sacks.
How many of those guys went to the playoffs?
How many of those guys have Odell Beckham and Saquon Barkley on the same team?
Okay, maybe Odell Beckham, TJ, is addition by subtraction. We know Odell demanded the ball. Look at this, another wide receiver picking up for receivers. I love it, TJ. I just think, listen, Eli is an average quarterback at this stage in his career. Drew Brees is down at 39, right? Tom Brady playing at 41. I don't see why Eli could not stick around for two more years, but he can't be making $23 million a year.
No, I'm not buying it. I'm not buying it whatsoever. This year, yes, because they don't have any option right now. But when you're building a team, you decide to let Odell Beckham Jr. go. That's one of your superstars, arguably the face of your franchise. You let him walk. Now you're basically saying Saquon Barkley is our face. Well, what is Saquon Barkley going to do? Because he's a young guy. He's going to say, well, Eli Manning, that's our guy. That's all they know. But when the media starts coming to Saquon Barkley's locker after every single game for the next 2 years, specifically this year, Saquon Barkley is going to say all the right things. But when he feels like I'm doing everything that I need to do, but this guy over here isn't, he may never say it, but his emotions are going to start to show something different. That's when it's going to be, look, Saquon Barkley's going to go upstairs and say, look, what are we doing? Are we going to get a quarterback in here? That's when it's going to become a real issue. Right now, they have Saquon Barkley as a rookie. He's going to say all the right things. He's loving Eli Manning because that's my quarterback. The same was with Odell Beckham until he became the face, and he figured, I need somebody that can really get me the ball. The Saquon Barkley's going to experience the same thing.
So me personally, right, the Giants, they're just doing what the 76ers did in basketball. They're tanking.
Tanking.
Fortify your offensive line, fortify your defensive line, and other pieces around it. You tank for Tua. If you can't get Tua, we tank for Trevor Lawrence. And that's what they're doing. And if you can have these two bad seasons and solidify your quarterback position for the next 12 to 15 years, that's not a bad idea. It really is. And you, as a Giant fan, you're not going to come out and tell your fan base this is what we're doing. I'm telling them now. This is what they're doing. They're tanking for Tua or for Trevor Lawrence, and it is what it is.
And which is what the Raiders appeared to be doing before they signed Antonio Brown as well, right? Get rid of everything, get as many draft picks as possible. I also think they're getting the salary under control. $23 million is far too much money, right? And the way in which all these other teams, like, look, Dave Gettleman's not an idiot. You look around the league, you're like, all right, how are the Bears able to have such a dynamic defense? Quarterback doesn't make any money, right? How are the Seahawks able to build the Legion of Boom? Quarterback wasn't making any money. How the Cowboys, quarterback wasn't making any money. So what they'll do is they'll extend him. The number will be far less. And then the question becomes, do they trade for Josh Rosen? Do they draft one this year? Or do they, as you
said, they obviously don't believe that Dwayne Haskins is a franchise quarterback. If they don't draft him this year with the sixth pick, that's okay, we don't believe. Personally, you could draft or trade for Josh Rosen, which, depending on how they rated him last year.
Right.
Rosen's problem is, and remember, they have a second first-round pick now because they traded Odell Beckham Jr. Rosen, the great thing about Rosen is, like, it's hardly any money. But Rosen's issue is, like, no one thinks he's a leader, and Arizona just drafted him. They have the same GM who just drafted him. And that same dude, 9 months later, is like, all right, you want to take him off my hands?
There's a problem there.
That's like reselling.
Or is it the coach saying, I might want this guy better?
Yeah, yeah. I understand, but that's like buying a house and then trying to sell it and being willing to lose money like 6 months later. Like, who does that unless you find a body buried in the basement?
All right. All righty then.
Hey, college football fans, Joel Klatt here. And over on my podcast, The Joel Klatt Show, we discuss the best teams, players, and storylines in all of college football. Any questions? Then send them in to the Joel Klatt Show mailbag, and I'll answer them. Tap the banner to follow The Joel Klatt Show on Spotify.
Jason McIntyre and Greg Jennings in for Whitlock and Wiley. Steven Jackson and Matt Barnes are back. Let's move to Houston, where James Harden had another monster game over the weekend, dropping a 50-point triple-double in a win over the Kings. Harden now has an NBA record 5 50-point triple-doubles for his career, making a major push to repeat as MVP, scoring 50 or more in 3 of his last 6. Greg, do you think Harden locked up the MVP this weekend?
Hold on, Greg. Did you see that?
You
can't let nobody go dribble between their legs 12 times. All right, go ahead. My bad, Greg. Go ahead, dog.
No, you're good. My bad. I love what James Harden has done. I think he's been phenomenal offensively, but I don't think he locked it up. I look at what Giannis has been able to do over in the East. His team has the best record in all of basketball. Mm-hmm. It's not just what he's doing individually, which his numbers are unbelievable as well. 27, 12, and 5. The last player to do that is Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, and we know where his jersey hangs. So I love what Giannis has been able to do. I think sometimes we get caught up into this
prisoner of the moment.
Prisoner of the moment, and with James Harden having already done this, we've seen this already. Yeah. And so it's one of those deals where we become enamored with what's new. Yeah. And Giannis, although he's always been able to be effective, he has not done this, and he has not allowed his team to be the number one seed in all of basketball. And I like what he's done. I think he has just as great a shot as James Harden, although James Harden is putting up some unbelievable numbers.
Harden's been incredible, but I do not think he locked up the MVP, guys. I think Giannis is my pick for the MVP. This is a guy, as Greg said, best record in basketball. They were the 7th seed last year, okay? Mm-hmm. Now they have the best record. It ain't just the new coach, okay?
And got a lot to do with it, though.
It does have a lot, but it's not like Chris Middleton and all those second, third, fourth best players have been incredible. Giannis leads his team in assists. This guy came into the league as a toothpick, and he was just a dunker, and he was athletic. He's now basically a point forward who is averaging 27 points a game. They are blowing teams out. They have the most 10 or more point victories in the league. And Giannis is sitting a lot in the fourth quarter, or his stats could be even better. I give Giannis the MVP. Harden has been phenomenal.
Yeah, I think Greg hit it on the head. I think leagues like to see new stuff. You know, there was a time in the span where Kobe could have won 3 or 4 yes. MVPs in a row when they handed them out to other people. You know what I mean? So James' work goes without saying, probably one of the most fun individual seasons we've seen in a long time from a player, what he's been able to do. Hope he doesn't run out of gas in the playoffs, but
again,
you know, this is new for Giannis and new for the Bucks, and he's led his team from, you know, almost middle to bottom of the East to top of the East. So I definitely wouldn't say he locked it up. I pick James to win it, but I wouldn't be surprised and wouldn't be mad at all if Giannis won it.
I don't think he locked it up. Me personally, I look at what they're both doing. They're both doing something that's great. You know, from being a 7 seed last year to being the best team in the league, having the best record, you got to give Giannis his props. He deserves to be MVP. Averaging 36 points, 50, 50, 50, 50, giving everybody 50. Like, you got to give him his props for that. They was out the playoffs. They're a third seed now.
Right.
Can be a two seed.
Right.
So you can't overlook what James is doing just because Giannis has the best record in the league.
Right.
Me personally, I would say this, just, and I have the same opinion with the Rookie of the Year. I got co-MVPs and co-Rookie of the Year for the first time in the NBA.
Yeah, that's never happened before. Yeah. Matt, I want to go real quickly. You said the word fun with James Harden. I got to ask you guys, do you find Harden's style that fun? You said it. Dribbles between his legs.
He wouldn't do that against me. I'm sorry.
I don't find it fun, Steven.
I'm sorry.
He's not that exciting.
I couldn't stop James, and I'm not saying I could stop him, but I would compete better than a lot of guys competing. It would never be a possession where I'm guarding James Harden, where he dribbles between his legs seven times before he take a shot. I'm sorry. The way they guard him now, they just let him do what he want and contesting the shot, we call that token defense. That's not real defense. But I'm not taking any credit away from him from what he's been doing. He's a great scorer, and he's the MVP this year. But the defense is not the same as when we were playing.
He leads the league in time of possession by a mile.
Dribbles.
Most dribbles per game. Like, guys, I'm sorry. I don't find it that fun. Yeah. And I think the media, as you said, that's going to vote for it is going to go Giannis.
It's dominant.
I think it's tough, too, as teammates to play with a situation like that. You know, as players, you understand he's your go-to. But as players, you still at least want to touch the ball to kind of feel the rhythm. You know what I mean? So when they start completely game planning for him to come in the playoffs and these guys haven't really got their touches and their rhythm, it's going to be a tough situation. But to piggyback on what Jack said, let's take away Middleton and maybe even Bledsoe, because that's how Harden's had to play this year with you know, his co-pilots, his second and third best players down and out. So they were 12th or 10th. He's brought them all the way back to third. So he's had to do a lot, and we may not agree with the style and how he's getting them, but he's got the team wins, and his numbers have been incredible. So to me, that's why he's the MVP.
They're going to suffer in the playoffs without Trevor Ariza, though. Watch.
Oh, huge.
Can't wait.
Huge mistake.
To Oklahoma City, where the Thunder continued their recent skid, getting stunned by a Mavs team playing without Luka Doncic, OKC has now lost 7 of their last 10 to fall to the 8th seed in the West. And after the game, Russell Westbrook didn't seem at all interested in talking about their struggles.
Russell, you guys play in recent weeks. Is that cause for alarm going into the playoffs?
Next question.
How do you explain the last 7 weeks? 7-15, I think you are.
Matt, what you want to do?
Next question.
Jason, so I asked you, are you worried about Russell Westbrook heading into the playoffs?
I got to be careful here because I know online they hate when I go after Russell Westbrook. I got to just say, folks, 2 years ago, okay, they lose in the first round and everybody said, well, Russell Westbrook, he didn't have any help, okay? So they get him Paul George. And then last year they lose in the first round again. Remember, Russ was taking like 40 shots in that series, the final two games they lost to the Jazz. Well, it was the first year with Paul George. Let's cut him some slack. So here we are again. No Kevin Durant, year 3. Russell Westbrook looking at the 8th seed, okay? He's been a turnover machine late in the season. Paul George goes down with a shoulder injury. This team can't get right. What is the excuse going to be, Greg Jennings, for Russell Westbrook when the Warriors extinguish these guys in 4 or 5 or 6? Like, I mean, what are we doing here? We keep defending Westbrook. I get the triple-doubles. Matt Barnes won't even look at me because he knows I'm being too harsh. I got to we just keep defending this guy, and he's not winning.
Yeah, I'm not defending him at all. I think, I personally am concerned. And the reasons why I have concern is because we're talking more and more about Russell Westbrook versus Paul George. And Paul George is the reason why they were so great before the All-Star break. That's my reasoning for questioning him going into the postseason. He put up 19 shots a game prior to the All-Star break. Now he's putting up 21. Get to the playoffs, the pressure mounts even more. He's going to want to put up more shots. They're going to need him to put up more shots because, as you mentioned about James Harden, the focus is going to be, can we take him away? When they try to take him away, that's when he does even more. And his turnovers have gone up. I just don't like what I'm seeing as far as a trending standpoint in Russell Westbrook's game. I need to see more Paul George. We should be talking more about Paul George, and we're not.
I think they had a perfect recipe, like you said, before the All-Star break of what it took to climb in the West. What worries me is they don't have that third option, which they desperately need. But to me, whoever's in the 8th spot, it doesn't matter what we think because they're going to get blown out. If they can sneak into the 7th spot, I could definitely see them, you know, a fresh breath, playoff start.
How could you say that?
The sun is out in the 8th seed.
You beat a 1 seed. How could you say that?
Yeah, this is not the same. This ain't that.
And they ain't us.
Yeah, right. So, but like I said, I don't really trust Denver in that 2 spot. They're too young, too inexperienced. Like I said, if OKC can get in that 7th spot, I think they can turn it on. I think they will have a fresh breath of life and could mess around and be a scary team. Because at the end of the day, Russ can either shoot you in the game or shoot you out of the game. They have two very special players there and those two guys. So if they get out of the eighth spot, I could see them really messing some things up if they get in that seventh spot and play in Denver.
League just better hope that they continue to play like they are and things don't click like they clicked before the All-Star break. When Russ and Paul was playing together, Russ was getting his triple-doubles and PG was getting 30, 35 a game, they were winning. Mm-hmm. What people didn't understand is their supporting cast is terrible.
What supporting cast?
Russ said, I was at the game against Golden State. They couldn't hit a house if they was in the kitchen, okay? Steven Adams is their third base player, but he really don't want the ball. He want to do the dirty work.
Yeah, he's not scoring.
You also have a guy you're paying $80 million that's on the sideline, was the first small forward to get hack-a-shacked in the playoffs. So this is the team we're talking about. They have a guard that's getting hack-a-shacked. They're not that good.
What about Dennis Schroeder, Steven?
He's okay. But they need another guy there. I think
Ferguson?
Like you said, Ferguson, he's an athlete, but he can't hit a house either. A lot of those guys are great athletes and are great role players, but they're not what they need. They're Russ and Paul need shooters. They need other guys that can make plays around them. And they're starting to look like they're wearing down as far as doing so much carrying the load during the season. That's why they're starting to lose now. Hopefully they can get some energy back and go into the playoffs and start playing better. But right now they look like they're going to be out of there quick.
So it sounds like, Greg, the supporting cast will be to blame when the Thunder get bounced in the first.
How you going
to
blame a man that's averaging triple-double?
Yeah, it's hard. I mean, I think you got to blame management for the supporting cast they've acquired.
Put Raymond Felton in there.
Yeah, you know people. You need to space the court. You need shooters. Schroeder has played well this season. Yeah, and yes. There's another kid. It's a long, young kid.
Grant?
Grant has had a good
season. Anthony Morrow's still sitting at home.
They've had a good season. They just don't have enough. You know what I mean? But like I said, if they can sneak in that seventh spot, anything can happen.
Welcome back. Jason McIntyre, Greg Jennings, in for Whitlock and Wiley. Houshmandzadeh's back with us. Let's move to Cleveland, where the Browns are getting serious hype after a promising first year from Baker Mayfield and some big moves this offseason, including trading for OBJ. In fact, the Browns' hype just isn't confined to Cleveland. Vegas is projecting 9 wins for Baker and company, putting them in a tie atop the AFC North with Pittsburgh. Greg, are the Browns getting too much hype?
Absolutely not. Absolutely not. I mean, what is not to like about the Cleveland Browns? And when have we gone into a season really excited to see the Cleveland Browns? Outside of last year because of Hard Knocks and it makes you fall in love with the team, and they do a great job with that. I love what the Cleveland Browns are doing. I think what their general manager has formulated as far as a roster, he's trying to win. He's trying to get a lot of players that he knows can coexist, that have something to prove. And what I mean by coexist, I mean, everybody wants to talk about the acquisition of Odell Beckham Jr. and all of those things. But what's special about this acquisition is he and Jarvis Landry have always competed, but have competed not to challenge one another in a negative way, but to get the best out of one another every single time they're on the football field. I love it. Having Baker Mayfield with this hype going in, a quarterback, your leader, who really embraces all of this and is just as excited as I am personally, I love the Cleveland Browns and what they've been able to do. And I haven't even talked about the acquisitions they've added on defense. Olivier Vernon, Sheldon Richardson. Like, we're just looking at the offensive acquisitions. But defensively, they were already pretty sound, and they've gotten better.
Yeah, well, let's not go overboard, okay, Greg? I'm going to give some pause for the city of Cleveland and Browns fans. First of all, let's start with the coach. Last year at this time, he was a quarterback coach, okay? Now he's in charge of a locker room with two of the strongest personalities in the league, Baker Mayfield, Odell Beckham. You know all their offensive skill players, when you toss in Kareem Hunt, Nick Chubb, all those guys are under 30. And that leads to my second point, experience or lack thereof. I had our great stats team pull all the guys on the Cleveland roster with at least a playoff win. Bunch of guys you've never heard of who are backups, and their punter, Britton Colquitt, who won a Super Bowl with the Broncos, okay? This team has never really experienced any success, and I think mentally they're going to go through a big hurdle, TJ, when it's, hey, man, last year we were hunting everybody, we were going after people. Everybody has the Browns circled on their calendar this year. It's a big difference going from hunting to being the hunted.
Number one, the only way to get experience is to get it.
That's true.
Right? Now, when you look at, is the hype too much? I agree with Greg. It isn't. When you examine the NFL and look at rosters, the only rosters that are comparable right now, and obviously we're talking on paper, the Rams, the Chiefs, the Dallas Cowboys, and maybe
the Atlanta Falcons
has
a very electrifying.
The Falcons defensively, they don't have offensively, yes. But defensively, they don't have what the Cleveland Browns has. The Cleveland Browns on paper, offensively and defensively, have one of the best rosters in the National Football League. I mean, it's two of the best receivers. You got a young quarterback that looks like he's going to be a top 10 quarterback here in the next year or two. Defensively, they should be much better now with Sheldon Richardson and Vernon added to that defense. They don't have many weaknesses on paper. It's what you said, experience. The only way you can get that is to go out there and play and get it.
And I don't want to be, like, negative on the Browns here. This is a playoff team. But, again, you know you've got to, you know, crawl before you can walk if you're a baby. This Browns team's going to experience a lot of primetime games, TJ. They're going to be on, you know, Monday Night Football, Sunday Night Football a lot.
We'll know right away, Jason, because they play the NFC West. So you're playing Seattle. Yep. You're playing the Rams. You're playing the 49ers.
Yep.
And so you have to, and you're going to play the Patriots.
But I want to see how Baker Mayfield handles some adversity. Because again, last year, lights out at Oklahoma, superstar. What happens if they start 1-3 and Odell Beckham's chirping and Jarvis Landry and then Nick Chubb? And you got a lot of young guys.
Handle adversity. What happens when you get drafted number one overall and they tell you you don't even have a chance to start at quarterback? Adversity right out the gate. So he's handled it already. What type of adversity?
Or you come out of high school and you can't get a scholarship and you got to walk on.
Yeah, I just.
That's adversity, huh?
I like this team and what John Dorsey is doing. He's getting players, although, albeit they have not won. But he has players that know what it takes to win. Hungry, talented players that when it comes down to the spotlight and the star shining the brightest, do I have enough of them?
Okay, who's the locker room leader in Cleveland, guys? Give me a name.
Baker Mayfield has to be that guy.
Just off his personality, what he has shown, it has to be Baker Mayfield.
That's not even in question.
He's shown that he doesn't have a problem with leading a team. He's shown that in a rookie year. He's shown that I'll come out, I'll be the face, I'll say what I gotta say.
So both of you have the Browns in the Super Bowl. Got it, okay.
No, we just, the hype is about,
do
it's
we
fair.
Believe the hype? And if we just go and look at their division, who do you like in their division? The Steelers
have Pittsburgh.
Pittsburgh, yes, because we've identified them as being very talented and having the experience. Baltimore is still they're the team that win the playoffs. Are we?
That's gonna be a good division.
It's gonna be a really good division.
What about your Bengals? Where are they at?
They got a good roster. They just ain't put it together. So maybe they can.
Greg, you can tell them. They're not going to the playoffs.
Hey, look, Cleveland
rocks. I
got a
story for you off air.
Welcome back. Jason McIntyre, Greg Jennings in for Whitlock and Wiley. TJ Houshmandzadeh is back. Let's move to Cam Newton, who is looking to bounce back from another down year. Seems pretty open-minded about how to get back on track. Last week, Cam told James Corden he decided to go celibate for the month of March, and today he revealed that his teammates will join him in the challenge. We should note, of course, it is April Fool's Day, but take a listen.
It has changed my life in incredible ways, and that's why I'm doing the Carolina Panthers Celibacy Super Bowl Challenge. I am going to challenge everybody on my team to not have no climax for the whole football season. I've already got guys that's pretty much buying into it. Right, guys?
Super Bowl 2020, here we come. I'm all on board, Cam. You already know what's going on. Let's get it.
Y'all know what it is. I've already lost seconds off my 40 time, too.
Hashtag Carolina Panthers Super Bowl 2020.
One thing I gotta say to you. F*** you, Cam Newton.
Okay. Greg, do you like Cam's mentality right now?
I love Cam's mentality, man. I do. I think you need this, especially in the offseason. This is a long offseason. Guys have to understand that we're going to work hard. We're gonna play hard. We're going to have fun while we're working. And Cam Newton, the knock on him has always been his maturity, his lack of maturity. And can he focus when it's needed for him to lock in? And the answer is yes. It's injuries that has really held him back. And being down there during training camp, watching them work, His teammates absolutely love him. His coaching staff absolutely loves him. This is what you need. In a smaller market, he's what's going to draw everyone to come to those Carolina Panthers games. He's their big ticket. He's going to have fun. This is his personality. You have to embrace it. I love it. I'm not going to do it. I'm married.
The only thing I like more than this mentality is that hat. That bill looks super long. I love it. Guys, when I think of the all-time great quarterbacks, you know, Aaron Rodgers, whom you played with, Tom Brady, I just can see them doing this kind of thing. Giving up celibacy for a month, it feels like a real leadership move. I love it, TJ. Absolutely love it.
The sarcasm is real. So he's making it fun. He's telling the team, we don't always have to approach things in a serious nature. We can have a little fun with this. When your leader comes out and just have... It's okay. That's what he's saying. It's okay to loosen up. Mm-hmm. It's okay to have fun. We do play a kid's game for a king's ransom. So let's not take everything so serious all the time. Mm-hmm. Now, obviously, it was a joke. You're telling a guy to
You
do
think?
And you're married, your wife is like, bruh, what's going on? But he makes it fun. And that's what you want. You're going to play a kid's game, you have to have fun with it.
Welcome back. Uncle Jimmy is here to help us with our approval ratings. But Jimmy, I'm looking at you, looking pretty fresh over there. What's up with the knee? Why are you down on bended knee?
Hey, man, first of all, let me tell you something. I don't mean no disrespect to nobody, all right? But I'm here under protest. All right, my no-good nephew set up and went to Kansas City for the weekend. He ain't say nothing to me. Then, hey, you want to roll to Kansas City? Nothing. I look up, man, he tweeting out a picture of him and Tech at the crib. Next thing I know, it done turned into a whole great big old party in the Saturday night. The dude in the hat, that's Marcus. He's the lead singer in the group Cold Delicious Rain. You know, I'm supposed to be the lead singer of this group, man. Hey, man, I don't know what my nephew up to, man. I wasn't none too happy this weekend. I'm just going to tell you.
Do you have a big dummy the other day?
Oh, yeah, I most definitely do. My big dummy of the day is my ex-nephew, Jason. Well, biggest dummy I know. I'm sorry. As a matter of fact, I'm mad at my sister, Jason's mama. She in Kansas City, too, and didn't tell me nothing. I mean, come on, man.
Well, let's get to our approval rating.
What?
Contain yourself, Greg. Greg can't even speak, folks. He's
Let's
shocked.
Get to our approval rating.
Oh, Jimmy, man. I like that LeBron.
Here's our highlight from our discussion about LeBron.
Let's get it, baby.
I think the Lakers should be worried. And it really has nothing to do with LeBron James. It has everything to do with the guys around him, with him having such a young core around him.
Lonzo and the young guys are going to watch the coaching situation closely. Is it going to be a LeBron handpicked coach, or is Magic Johnson going to get his guy? If I'm the young guys and I see LeBron get his guy in there, I'm definitely nervous.
All right, Uncle Jimmy, what's your take?
Craig, let me ask you a question,
Hold
man.
Hold on, man. You hit me with the Craig?
Why are we not talking about Zion?
The level of disrespect. He called you Craig.
Hey, man, LeBron James is yesterday's news. Zion is the future.
I tend to agree with him. I mean, LeBron's first season in L.A. was a disaster.
Stop.
Thank you very much, Mr. McIntyre.
Welcome.
Okay, all right, thank you very much. Now, Uncle Jimmy, Look, how can I say this here?
I mean, wait, you got a LeBron James jersey on. What are you talking about the future?
At least it's not tucked in, though. That's nice.
Hey, man, first of all, let me tell y'all something. Uncle Jimmy ain't dancing on LeBron's grave. Okay, I'm not doing that. The chosen one could up and rise again. Okay? Hey, man, to be honest with you, I'd much rather talk about how impressed I was with Zion and his performance all weekend. You know, the little dude was... amazing on and off the field.
Little dude. I want to talk about Zion. Yeah. But so you have nothing else to say about LeBron?
Oh, no, I'm just talking about Zion, period, man. Did you look at this guy? Did you see how he handled his business? Look, after the game, what did he do? He went up, he shook guys' hands, he looked at them straight in the eye, and he shook his hands, right? That's what he did, right? That's a man, you know? I'm looking at the way this little 18, 19-year-old kid handles himself. I see some of these athletes out here, some of these professional athletes, that could learn from this
Jim,
little kid.
About LeBron, anything.
Oh, man, you know, look, oh, man, I'm broke my bit my lip.
Hold on.
We got a.
I'm not even gonna be able to finish this segment, Craig.
And if you call me Craig one more time, you not.
No, I think my lip bleeding, man. I'm gonna have to shut this down for the rest of the segment.
Alrighty, Greg. Greg, oh man, buddy. Greg, stay down. All right, approval ratings. Here we go.
Somebody take me out the game.
Greg, you want to go first?
Yeah, absolutely. I want to go first. I got obviously LeBron James at GOAT status. When I look at his job performance, 23, his all-time great status, and let me stop for a minute with job performance. The reason why his job performance is at 23, right. He was a little banged up this year. He could have done more had he been healthy, so I knocked him for that. All-time great. What? Do we know any other player that's greater than him?
Yes.
Michael Jordan.
Right.
That's why he's the 24. Then when I look at, what's the other one? His character. His character has always been under wraps. He has no luggage, no baggage. The only bad thing that we can say about him is his body language has been bad.
Oh gosh, get off that body language. All right, LeBron. Hey, man, I love you. I love you, LeBron. I'm a fan. I follow you on Instagram. My approval rating right there with you. 89, strong in every category. He's in GOAT status. No doubt about it, Greg. Boy, he called you Craig like three times. Like, I'm still shocked by that. Maybe on our next show, Rachel Bonetta will call Clay Travis like, you know, something other than Clay. All right, Greg, you got any parting shots for the crowd? Anything?
Absolutely. LeBron is the greatest of all time, second.
Zion Williamson to the Knicks, baby!
Hey, college football fans, Joel Klatt here. And over on my podcast, The Joel Klatt Show, we discuss the best teams, players, and storylines in all of college football. Any questions? Then send them in to the Joel Klatt Show mailbag, and I'll answer them. Tap the banner to follow The Joel Klatt Show on Spotify.